As I said earlier this afternoon when we were promoting the fact that we were going to be chatting with Anna Scobie this afternoon, the article that I picked up, I think it was in the weekend Sydney Morning Herald, it said that Anna peered out through the rain of her Newcastle home and was watching a thriving colony of bees quietly buzzing around her yard, foraging and producing enough honey to feed themselves and supply her beekeeping business. But that's not the way it's going to continue, unfortunately, for Anna Scobie. She joins me on the phone this afternoon. Thanks for your time. Anna, how are you?
I'm okay. I've had better weeks.
Now, you run a business called Urban Hum. Before we talk about this varroa mite and how it's really affected you, tell me, how old is your business, Urban Hum, and how did it come about?
So I've been running the business. I'm a co-owner for nearly 10 years, and it came about through an interest in gardening and a lack of pollination in our garden. So we were hand pollinating zucchinis, and then when we started researching bees, because they're good pollinators, we were reading so much about how they were struggling around the world because of different reasons, pesticides, different things, but a lot about varroa mite as well, and that Australia was the only continent to not have it. So we wanted to get in and support them here, and and then one hive led to two, and then we had too much honey, so we went to the markets and found out that Newcastle loved honey and bees, and lots of people hosted hives for us in their backyards, and then as we learnt more and more, we started teaching.
How many hives did you end up having?
2 years ago we had 130, and then last year we decided to move down to 90 so we could concentrate more on the teaching aspect of the business, less on the honey production. But so right now we're, at the beginning, 2 weeks ago we had 90 hives. Several have already been destroyed.
When you said you decided to move to 90 hives because to be able to spend more time on teaching, is this to teach people how to do a hive themselves, how to set up and run a hive themselves? Is that what you were talking about in reference to teaching?
Yeah, it's what myself and my co-owner just really love is the teaching one-day beekeeping courses and hearing other people's passions for bees as well and getting to show them inside a hive and help them set up their own. So we've had hundreds of students go on and get their own bees and have their own bee journey.
Now, what happened 2 weeks ago?
So it's something that we have always taught about is that once you get a hive, you become part of the food security network across Australia, that there are already pests and diseases in Australia that you need to look out for, and that varroa mite is a risk, and that risk was discovered in the Sentinel hives, which are hives that are checked every 6 to 10 weeks in the port of Newcastle to see if varroa mite had stowed away in a shipping container on a swarm of bees and it was discovered there, which meant that the biosecurity plan came into action and we became a red zone to start with. It was only discovered right in that inner city area, so it became a 3 kilometre red eradication zone, which would have been about 60% of our hives, but then a couple of days later it was discovered further out and encompassed all of them and has continued to be further afield.
So the 90 hives that you had, you will have none of those 90 hives, is that correct?
No. Sadly, our teaching apiary in Mayfield was actually destroyed yesterday, and our Tomago and Hexham hives have already been destroyed. Several of our single hive locations that are hosted by other people are still around because they've been deemed a bit lower risk, not near other outbreaks. And then our ones at Cardiff are still here, but their days are numbered.
Now, did I read in this article that you won't be able to set up hives again for a couple of years? Is that correct or wrong?
It is correct. So the Department of Primary Industries are wanting to eradicate the mite from Australia, and I think that's something that's been very difficult for people to understand because the rest of the world have been living with and managing varroa for you know, almost 20 years in New Zealand, a lot longer in other countries. But the management strategies are really quite difficult and for beekeepers. One, it means that chemicals get introduced to the hive to kill the mites, and then they have to look more extensively, more regularly than Australian beekeepers do to keep on top of the mite risk. And if they don't, they lose their hive.
Right.
So the DPI don't want that in Australia, nor do beekeepers, which is why it seems so hard that, yes, there will be a ban. So from the last mite and honeybee being found in the red zone, there will be a three-year ban.
If you
so when
move,
that starts, we don't know.
If you move outside that red zone, and firstly, how many kilometres is that DPI red zone at the moment in the Hunter area?
So right now, it's grown considerably in the last couple of weeks. So they've found infected colonies in Port Stephens on the Central Coast and out to the west as well. So it has grown considerably. And there are updates every day. The reason they feel like it's still on track to eradicate is that they're doing testing on those mites, and they're all genetically linked to the to what they're thinking is the original source.
Right.
So it's like contact tracing with COVID. They feel like they can still get on top of this. Where that red line will end up, that's one of the messages that the DPI said in the community briefing was, let's find the edge of this outbreak. Let's find exactly where it is. We'll eradicate and then make further plans. So they're still trying to find that edge.
And at this stage, they don't know where that edge is.
No. Yeah. So the only one that's sort of outside of this area is Narrabri, but it is linked back to a movement of bees from Tomago to Narrabri, and they have a red zone there.
So what does this mean for your 10-year-old business? I mean, for the next 3 years you can't operate it, or do you try to move to an area outside the red zone and set up the business, or is that just not feasible because at the moment you don't know how far away in kilometres that red zone is?
For some businesses, beekeeping businesses that are migratory beekeepers, it will be possible. They will move outside of this area and set up their business. For us, our core business was teaching and local honey production. So we sold our honey, like we called it single origin honey. So Cardiff honey was sold to the people of Cardiff at cafes. You know, Newcastle East honey was sold at Escobar. It was all about that local connection to food. So for us, we don't know our exact plans, but we're going to put the business on hold. My co-owner, Kelly, actually works part-time before this at the Agricultural College for the Department of Primary Industries, and she has been recruited into this bio response team and been working very long hours to try to contain this. So her focus will be on the health of the whole industry for the next 3 years.
Right.
And hopefully we can start up the business again. We do have people that have beekeeping vouchers that we will either have to refund, or some have already said to us they're going to wait for us to find our feet again once this passes, which is a beautiful thing.
Goodness me. And I imagine, are you just one of other of a number of other operators that are in the same boat here?
Very much, but it's not just about industry. There's probably over 1,000 recreational beekeepers in this area, but these become part of the family. Like my four-year-old suits up in her little bee suit and helps me spot the queen. You know, it's part of, just like backyard chooks and veggie gardens, it's part of a life where you can have a food source in your own backyard. So it's a sadness that I think has spread to lots and lots of people in this area.
How long will it be if they're talking about a three-year period here, but do they really know at this stage as to how long it will be before and if they are going to be able to eradicate the varroa mite from this area?
So they don't know. So there's two scenarios. One scenario is they will eradicate, and that ban will take place once the last hive is destroyed, no mites are in the area.
Right.
So that relies on our community reporting feral colonies that they've seen when they're bushwalking. There's a DPI hotline and email set up for it. If you Google DPI Varroa, it gives you all the information. So that relies on the community saying, actually, I know a street that there's a beehive in a chimney and I see them coming and going. All European honeybees do actually, sad as it is, have to go in this area for it to be successful.
Right.
And then that time period will start from then. The second scenario is if they can't contain, they can't eradicate varroa mite, they will move to management strategies. So the industry, there'll still be restrictions, like currently it's restrictions. Beekeepers can't go from New South Wales to Western Australia. Western Australia doesn't have a few diseases that the rest of Australia has, so there's a hard border there. So there will be border restrictions for beekeepers.
Right.
But this area will be able to return sooner to beekeeping and learn from the rest of the world on their methods. It just will be very... Recreational beekeepers will need to learn more on how to manage the hive to keep it healthy with varroa mite, and commercial producers will have to spend a lot more money and time, and sadly many will have to resort to chemicals. So for us, we have pure honey, it's just as the bees made it, so we will have to look at some of the alternate methods that are being used around the world as well.
And that will be everywhere in New South Wales, or just in this area here, or will it be everywhere?
If they don't eradicate, that will be the future of beekeeping.
Right.
It will include, for most commercial beekeepers, chemicals to contain the mite so the bees can live. That then has to be managed so that there's safe levels of consumption in honey.
Mm-hmm.
It also builds up in wax, which then builds up resistance for varroa.
Right.
And I think that big difficulty is that the rest of the world don't know how good Australia has it, which is why we're getting heaps of emails and comments and saying, the death of all these hives is so unnecessary, we manage this. They do, and they do a commendable job with what they have. We're lucky enough to have a shot at eradicating it, and we need to take that so that we can just beekeep and work with the bees, not add chemicals, you know, have pure Australian honey, organic Australian honey.
And for people who just love honey, I mean, I suppose listening to you and you explaining it so well, this is really a big problem, a major problem. It really is. It's not something that can be said, oh, it'll be sorted out, don't worry about it. It won't, will it?
And it goes forward to pollination as well.
Yes.
So the almonds rely very heavily on migratory beekeepers to come down to Victoria to pollinate them, which will happen at the beginning of August. And without that, there'll be less almonds produced. The cost will go up. That's only one crop that's dependent. You know, carrots don't set seeds without bees pollinating them. You know, how our agricultural system is set up is to rely on European honeybees.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of wonderful regenerative farming practices that are supporting native colonies to help pollinate crops, but it's sort of just begun, you know. It's not set up to feed all of us just yet. You know, there's a beautiful future there, but right now we're not there.
Right now all we can do is wait and see.
Yeah, and I think the key message is that people do need to report those colonies. And if they're in doubt that a neighbour has bees and haven't registered it, they can have that chat with the neighbour, make sure they're aware, or they can actually report it themselves. And it's those feral ones that are going to be the hard ones to get on top of.
Yeah, very true. Very true. All right. Well, look, thank you for taking the time to talk to me this afternoon. I really do appreciate it. And we'll just sit back and watch and hope and keep our fingers crossed that this is over quicker for people like yourself that are doing wonderful things in the industry for expanding the knowledge of the industry and expanding the knowledge for people that wish to become part of the industry.
Yeah, and I encourage people, we have one last market. We're going to go to the olive tree markets at Civic Park on the 16th of July. So I've been jarring the honey that we had already off the hives before the outbreak. So that'll be a time that we can connect with our customers and offer that to them. But we're also happy to chat about the situation if people have more questions. The other exciting thing is Trees in Newcastle, a volunteer-run native nursery, is going to be at the store with me selling really good plants for native bees. Because what we're going to have to do in this area, if we're looking at a 3 years without honeybees, we're going to really have to support our native bees and give them lots of floral options in our suburbs. So they'll be there alongside to answer questions about what are good plants for native butterflies and native bees.
And when is this date again, please?
It's July the 16th. This Saturday, but the next, at Civic Park Olive Tree.
Okay, July 16th, just wrote it down. Can you buy your honey online or not, just at the markets?
We've actually, taken it off stock, off the website, and we're just, because we have so many customers that have supported us over the last 10 years, we want to give them first option.
Of course, absolutely. Yeah. And this is the last hurrah, so if you want to get some urban honey, hopefully not the last of urban hum honey, but for the moment it will be. It's July 16. Again, thank you for being so generous with your time this afternoon, and it's been lovely talking with you, Anna, over a difficult subject.